Support for Soundwaves from the Underground is brought to you by 24tix.com, the most convenient way to buy tickets to your favorite local concerts. Save time, save money, rock out. 24tix.com, your ticket to the experience.
I'm JP, and welcome to another edition of Soundwaves from the Underground, the official podcast of Slug Magazine in Salt Lake City, Utah. Slug is an acronym for Salt Lake Underground, and we're one of the oldest independent publications in the United States. We distribute free monthly issues about music, art, action sports, and subculture. On today's episode, we're going to be learning more about We Are One Skate Park. We're going to be speaking with belly dancer and Beats Antique Contest winner Stephanie Buranek. We're going to be doing the weekly daily calendar rundown with Esther and Josh. We're going to be learning more about Tilly's Surf and Skate Shop, and we're going to be hearing music from Levi James Lebo and Non Non. Maybe you've heard about We Are One, the indoor skate park and product shop in Midvale. Slug writer Sean Zimmerman-Wall recently spoke with the co-owners, Matt Farnworth and Zach Nelson, about this trove of all things action, sports, graffiti, music, and accessories. The park also offers sessions, daily passes, and private lessons. Here's Zimmerman-Wall with more.
Well, it's so wonderful not to go dancing. Kind of starting out, just want to know maybe what the concept behind We Are One is, and you can kind of tell us how you guys got started.
Basically, Matt and I just came together and been brainstorming for about the past 2 years. Really, we noticed that it didn't seem like anybody was putting together an indoor skate park in the valley, and we really wanted to because we're both professional rollerbladers and we love to get as much skate time in as possible, you know, just to keep with our trick vocabulary and comfortability. And really, it's a pain when wintertime comes and you can't go outside to skate anymore, like no street skating, no park skating, no nothing, you know. It's just like ski and snow sports. It's just we wanted to provide some that we were used to when we were younger. We grew up with the Real Ride indoor skate parks and like Premier indoor skate park, and like that was a great time, just awesome outlet for kids to go skate during the winter and us like have something to do. So really it's like kind of started out there. Plus two, it's really just kind of been a all-time childhood dream of like mine and Matt's. Like ever since I could remember, I've always wanted an indoor skate park. And like it was funny when we all came together and started really talking about it, Matt was just basically telling the exact same thing too, that it was really like his dream to get this going, and that's really like what brought us together to really work hard and see if we can make it happen.
You guys kind of had the brainstorming after a couple of years, you wanted to provide something for the community. What was kind of the next step as far as breaking onto the scene? Did you guys have to do permitting since you're in this part of town, or can you describe that?
Afterwards, it basically we just started just coming up with a list of all the different goals we feel we had to accomplish in order to, you know, get to where we are now. But yeah, so really just started out with us like warehouse hunting. We were like looking up quotes on how much it would be just to even like build a skate park, looking on like liability insurance quotes, looking at like the different industrial building market to see like what warehouse space we can get and like what's good deals, what isn't good. And then it's almost like we just had to like attack everything from multiple points. It seemed like we had almost like 10 different like lists of like all these different things to do, and it's just basically me and Matt going every day for like that year and a half, like just working solid through the whole thing, like without really taking any days off, and just, you know, like researching and finding different prices and bids and quotes and talking to like different officials to get like certain like paperwork and different like steps needed to make our business legit. So it's really hard for us. It was I don't know, kind of like really the first time I've ever done anything like it, like dealing with like setting up a business or anything, and it was pretty eye-opening. It was like a huge learning experience, and definitely like we had to work hard to get to where we are. So
park been received by people involved in the city? And
It's been awesome. I think everyone is really stoked to finally have an indoor skate park. Even just not only for the winter, but just the fact of skating wood is so much different than skating cement parks. I mean, it just brings a whole different feel. There's just different obstacles that you haven't been able to ride before. You know, we've gotten way good feedback from bikers. They love it. We had Gatorade Free Flow contest, which enabled, you know, all the amateurs to be on their path to turning pro and going into the Mountain Dew Tour. We've had pro rollerblade contest. We just had a scooter contest today. And so there's just been a lot of support. Everyone seems to be really stoked. It just seems to be picking up more and more as it gets colder.
One thing I really noticed too is that we do get a lot of positive feedback on how we are pretty open with every sport, and we don't really exclude anybody, and we try to like just keep it open to as many people possible. You know, it's just like different strokes for different folks, you know, like everyone has like something else that they'd rather be doing. So like some people skate, some people rollerblade or scooter or bike, and it's definitely cool to be in a atmosphere that's just like allows that, and there really doesn't feel like there's a whole lot of hate as you would feel if you went to like an outdoor park or anything. You know, like there's always like those different cliques if you go to some spots, but like, you know, at least here you can always know that like you're welcome, so.
Yeah, or even some other spots have just straight up denied us from skating like an indoor park. They're like, oh, rollerblading's a wacky good time and all, but you can't skate here. Yeah. And we just really wanted to overcome that whole thing, not only as just like, you know, people riding parks, but just like as people in general, you know, we're just united by our differences. It's just all together. We don't care if you're exactly the same as us or if you're completely different. It's awesome to see everyone doing their own thing. So
that's good. And that falls under the mentality of we are one.
Yeah.
Right?
So exactly. Yeah.
You guys really practice that in real life.
Yeah. That's why we felt the name just so well suited. Like right as it was one day, Matt just was like, you know what? Just like, I think it should just be We Are One Skate Park. And I was just like, we are one. That sounds really cool. Like I like the message and vibe that name gives off, and just really feel it's like best for what we're trying to portray. So
that's good to hear. I'm glad that you guys are helping promote that type of mentality too. And like you said, sometimes at the outdoor parks, you don't get quite the same feel. You guys also have a pretty kick-ass shop in there, it looks like.
Thanks.
You guys had a pretty good reception with that. People coming in to pick up product and stuff.
Yeah, surprisingly. Yeah, I was thinking about it the other day. Compared to when we first opened, our shop's grown like quite a bunch, you know, like it's basically tripled in size. Like we have a lot more product catering towards like all rollerbladers and bikers, or we're starting to get more bike product right now. That's like the other thing that we're starting to focus. But yeah, we for sure have like tons of skateboard product. We've also started to get like tons of scooter product. We sell wheels and grips, and we're starting to get like forks and decks for the kids and stuff. Yeah, it's just our shop's been just growing and growing, and same too, we got like our online store launched about like 2 months ago, and that's slowly been picking up more and more orders and helping out a bunch. So
what's the website address for that?
It's weareoneskate.com.
cool.
Yeah. So it's weareoneskate.com.
Oh, okay. Cool.
And then yeah, you could go on there, check out everything that we have in store. You can order and we can ship it to your house, or you could just save the shipping and come and pick it up in store. But yeah, you can get like shoes, you can get longboards, skate decks, trucks, wheels. It's the only rollerblade shop in Utah, so it's the only place you can actually come and try on multiple pairs of different aggressive skates. And then also there's only one other scooter shop that, you know, it's a bike shop that sells some scooter products. So other than them, we're the only scooter shop that you can actually like come in and pick up the scooter product, you know, instead of ordering it online.
Can't be around without getting back, 'cause every taste you ever got is the best you ever had. Why she gotta go and do it that way? Your guess is as good as mine. Then she goes against me in this and that way. So cruel, so unkind. She take one for the body, one for the head, one for the things that she wish she had said. She's gone.
It seemed like today's contest generated quite a bit of, you know, young kids in the sport. And you guys see that throughout your contests? What other contests have you done?
We've already done like a professional rollerblade contest. Let's see, we did the Gatorade Free Flow contest, which was the qualifier for Gatorade Free Flow finals and even Dew Tour finals in Las Vegas. So that was pretty big. We had local Tyson Bauerbank took first at our contest, and made it all the way into the top three of the finals at Dew Tour, which was
wow. He took second, awesome. So he was one place away from actually turning pro, which would have been awesome. So
yeah, he, because of our contest, really seemed like it helped him out get to like a pretty good status in skateboarding. And yeah, just with the rollerblade contest, that was pretty huge. That got us a lot of exposure internationally. We get a lot of emails from like different people from like Germany or France, Spain, just all like, just like Netherlands too, like most time too, it's like different. I've got like some emails in like different languages. You gotta like do the whole like Google Translator and like it's just like, oh, your park's so awesome, like I need to head out to Salt Lake. And it's just like, no way, thanks.
That's great.
Man, like it's awesome to hear that feedback from people, to hear like people want to come across like the world just to come to Utah and skate our park, which is pretty sweet. Yeah, so that's helped out a ton with our exposure in like the rollerblade scene, the bike scene too. Our bike contest was pretty huge. We had a lot of people come out and a lot of local pros too. And yeah, everyone came out to really just like have a good time and kill it. It was probably some of the best bike riding we've seen. Yeah, now with the scooter contest, it's just picking up a bunch of kids coming into it, and it seems like it's all going like really good. Everyone's like really stoked on the sport, it seems like, and we're getting like just much more of a following, and it's really like helping kids get used to that feeling of, I guess, competing in contests too. Mm-hmm. Like, so I'm hoping that maybe this will be like the start of like helping set up like a bigger contest circuit for scooters in the US or something.
Yeah, I think that's like one of the main things and ideas behind our skate park is like, you know, anytime we wanted to go to a contest to compete to qualify for world championships, we'd have to travel all the way to California. And so there's
10 hours.
That's one thing about an indoor skate park is like you can't really have contests. You can have contests at outdoor parks, but you don't really see a lot of like big circuits having contests at outdoor parks where they qualify you to go to like world championships or qualify you to be able to go to a contest where you can turn pro. So that's another big advantage of having an indoor park here, is like, you know, it brings more opportunity for people to go to contests and get qualified to go to world championships, to go to Mountain Dew Tour, to go to many different progressive competitions. And also it just leaves a lot of opportunity for sponsorship too. I mean, the more you can get out and go to contests and get that exposure, the more likely you are to be able to pick up different types of sponsorship and actually be able to progress in your sport without having to travel from state to state to state. You can actually just start here and then qualify to go yeah, other places. So it's pretty cool to be able to do that.
It's definitely not a something that for me and Matt, yeah, it's definitely pretty foreign, you know, just like we were saying, all the contests we would go to for the past like 2 years have been more than 100 miles away, you know.
Wow.
Gets pretty pricey when you're traveling across the nation paying for contests and gas and food, so.
For session times, lessons, and pricing, go visit We Are One Skate Park on Facebook or check out their website at weareoneskate.com. Levi James Lebo is the guitarist for local band White Hot Ferrari, and during his private time, Lebo put together an 11-track album of piano and chamber music working with Andy Patterson, Josh Asher, Annie Asher, and Dan Whitesides. From Lebo's solo album, Autography, released back in mid-November 2011, here's America. Thank you. That was Levi James Lebo's America from his solo album Autography. To download the full album for free, check out levijameslebo.bandcamp.com. Today we're joined by dancer Stephanie Buranek. She is a belly dancer who recently won a contest at Slug for an opening spot at a recent Beats Antique concert, which was pretty awesome. I saw the video. Thanks for joining us, Stephanie. How are you doing?
I'm great. How about yourself?
Good, thank you. It was really impressive, the kind of dancing you were doing that day, but not necessarily what you regularly do. You're an Egyptian-style belly dancer, or maybe that's wrong. Why don't you tell me what you are?
I have studied Egyptian-style belly dance. I guess because I'm an American, I think that my dancing reflects the fact that I'm from the United States. So I would say that I try to portray Egyptian-style dance, is what I'd say.
And you threw a little bit more fusion flavoring into that for the Beats Antique show.
Yeah, absolutely. It's something I've been playing with a lot lately.
The crowd seemed to love it.
I think I got a good response.
And you've been dancing for 17 years. You started when you were 15 years old. Mm-hmm. You're a Salt Lake City native. And how do you think the native peoples around here, as in Utahns, accept belly dancing or the style of dancing that you do?
I think that I have always had a warm reception. I think that years ago when I first started performing, a lot of the performances I did were at bars, generally as an opening act for a band. For me, I feel like it's always been really easy, but I've also been attracting an alternative audience. But I would say that the conservative members of Salt Lake really enjoy it as well.
And how does belly dancing or Egyptian style dancing or traditional, or whatever you want to call it, how does that fit into the worldwide and American dance community, would you say?
Well, I think that belly dancing is a really broad term, and I don't know, just like in other artist communities, you have different genres. The same thing goes for belly dancing. So I think that in recent years, belly dancing it's kind of forming some legitimacy as an art form and a respected dance style, which is really exciting. I think the difference between belly dancing and other styles of dance is that any woman or any man can do it in adulthood and not be a professional, but actually get the opportunity to perform. And I think that that's really exciting.
And where does this style of dance fit in for people that may not be familiar with it? Can you give us a little bit of a history in terms of worldwide dancing styles?
I think that belly dancing originates in the Middle East. Its roots are ancient, and it was originally used as a way to express celebration in people's homes, so it was a folk dance. And so, I think that there are many styles of dance that originated in that way. I think that the roots of ballet are very similar. And so it was something that was brought to the stage in the 1900s as a way for Egyptians to, take advantage of Western tourism.
And where do you personally fit into that history? How did you get interested in it?
It started out when I was in junior high or high school. One of my best girlfriend's older sisters was into it, and she was gothic, so it was really cool because it was alternative. It was awesome. It wasn't like being a cheerleader or something. It was a little bit edgier, and so that appealed to my friend and I, and so we started taking classes. And I think that it was just something that I really, really loved. And so I sought out more information about it and took as many classes as I possibly could and learned as much as I could about the dance.
And what companies or schools have you been involved with over your time in belly dancing?
I guess quite a few. I'm probably like a musician who bounces from band to band. I danced in a dance company called Baraka, headed up by a gentleman named Aziz and his partner Rafa. So I learned a lot of my dance skills from men, believe it or not. From there, I was one of the original members of the Blue Lotus Dance Collaborative. And then from there, I began a dance company called the Hawthor Dance Collective. And I just recently have opted to kind of go out on my own and do my own thing, so.
And you've got a website that people can go to. It'll be up or still a little bit under construction by the time this episode airs. Can you tell people about that?
Yeah, it's stephanieshimmies.com. And it just, it'll give a basic overview of what it is that I do. I teach several classes a week currently, and will continue to do that through the new year. And I also teach at Salt Lake Community College.
People oftentimes associate the form of dance you do with females, but as you said, males dance and teach as well, and there's a strong tradition of that. Why do you think people just associate it so much with females?
I think that in the Middle East, it's taboo for a man to do a woman's dance. So if you're speaking specifically of traditional Middle Eastern dance, which is the roots of belly dance, there's a man's version of the dance and a woman's version of the dance. But there are lots of male dancers that perform the man's version but can teach the woman's version really well. So I would definitely say that there's a huge distinction. A man dancing a woman's dance is definitely taboo in the Middle East. But, you know, we live in the United States, so I think anything goes here.
And if people are interested in getting more involved in the belly dance scene in Utah, there's a few options, right? There's classes you teach as well, but you recognize that there's some other schools around, I imagine. Where should people go for more information about Utah belly dance?
There is a website, I think it's called utahrocks.com, that will list all of the professional dancers in the state, as well as all the instructors in the state of Utah. And Salt Lake has the largest population of belly dancers per capita in the nation. So there's a lot out there.
So utahrocks.com?
Yes.
And do you have anything final to add about belly dancing, Stephanie?
I love it. I'm really passionate about what it is that I do. And I think the fact that there are so many different styles of belly dance just means that the art form is alive and well, continues to progress. That's all, I guess.
Well, thank you for stopping by. And we encourage people to check out your website, Stephanie Shimmys. That's S-H-I-M-M-Y-S. .com for more information about you. It's time once again to sit down and talk about upcoming events here at Slug Magazine and Salt Lake City in general. We're joined today for our daily, weekly calendar rundown. What is there?
Weekly, daily.
All right. So you say, by Esther Maronio and Joshua Joy. Hey, Joshua.
Hey again.
So great to have you here. Josh, before we started this segment, you just wheeled over and had some sweet tarts, the Merry Mix.
It's Josh, the Christmas special. Josh always has candy here.
And I said to myself, that's good enough reason for Josh to join us for this. So thanks again for joining us, Josh.
No problem.
We've got some fun upcoming events, and you're aware of them, and maybe not, Josh, but we've got some birthdays in the audience here today. We've got some birthdays on staff. Happy birthday, Cody Kirkland, and happy birthday, Gregory Jarulat.
Wait, let's tell people who they are.
Okay.
So Cody Kirkland is one of my favorite copy editors, and he's actually so awesome that he got the contributor limelight in the December issue. So you can check out more about him in the December issue.
And then next on the list, happy birthday to Gregory Jarulat. Am I pronouncing that correctly?
I don't know, Jarulat.
He's a music
ever
writer.
Greg, how to? No.
And happy birthday to Trista Yard. She's a designer. You know her, Josh.
Yeah, I know her.
All right, good. And why don't you tell everybody what's happening January 6th, Josh? What's exciting about that day?
January 6th, that is Friday. It's the new issue of Slug coming out, so you can pick that up anywhere cool. Coffee shops, probably any shows you're going to probably go and do that night.
Josh Joy's bedroom.
Yeah.
You have a rack in there?
Quite a few.
Hey, yo.
Any place cool.
I get it, Josh. It's a sex joke. That wrecks. Okay, good. And Sunday, January 8th, probably our favorite day of the year. It's another birthday for Angela Brown.
I'll say it together.
Josh is shaking his head.
Happy birthday,
Happy birthday, Angela Brown. Josh?
Happy birthday, Angela.
He didn't want to do it together. He got that Esther.
He gets all muddied up.
It does. That was her idea. Look at her, man.
Josh is very particular about birthdays.
Really?
As I found out yesterday when it was his.
By the way, we did this early.
You're spoiling the magic of us recording it the day it comes out, Esther. We do this in advance. And also that day, When the Lions Go Down Story Evening at Moe's, which is a Moth-style storytelling event. The Moth is a really awesome storytelling series, I think originating in Philly or somewhere on the East Coast, and now it's spread across the U.S., so that should be really exciting. Are you guys going to attend that at all?
I didn't even know. I possibly will. I listen to that podcast all the time, and it's a really good one. I recommend it.
Oh, definitely. All right, and we have one final birthday.
Yep. So last but not least, on Monday, January 9th, we also have another birthday. Kyle Trammell's birthday, and he's one of our writers.
Happy 15th birthday, Kyle.
Here's the 15 more. Thank you, sir. And Josh. for another riveting episode of the weekly daily calendar rundown.
Yay! You got it right!
Non Non is an experimental electronica project from SLC musician Dave Madden. He's worked with musicians such as Lapsed and Nolens Volens on various split projects. He released his first album in 2007 with Lapsed, entitled The Death of Convenience. Then in 2009, the underground cult album, The Entitlement Generation. He signed to Automation Records in 2011 to release the album called El Socialismo in late November. From that album, here's Wassels. To find out more on the project, look up Non Non on Facebook, that's N-O-N-N-O-N, and to download or purchase a physical copy from the label, visit automationrecords.bandcamp.com. Sports lifestyle superstore Tilly's was founded out of Irvine, California in 1982 as the World of Jeans and Tops. They've recently expanded into Utah in Farmington with a grand opening that happened on December 10th. Here's Lauren Paul speaking with Tilly's marketing coordinator, William Marquis.
Metaphysical arcane, a word that's wish but never taken in vain, a living dream, a line, look within the pain.
I was reading that you have been a company since 1982, and it's surf and skate. So why Farmington? Why Utah? What attracted Tilly's to open up a store in our state?
Well, Utah has such a great kind of snowboard scene that really ties in with the action sports kind of lifestyle brands that we carry. Skate and snow and surf, they're so closely tied, and many of those snowboarders also skate or surfers also snowboard. So it's really just kind of a blend of all that, and the brands we carry really transition well into the snowboarding scene also. Plus, there's such a huge young demographic in Utah that's so great for Tilly's and the brands that we carry. So we just thought it'd be a perfect fit.
So how is the Farmington store? How was the opening weekend?
The grand opening was great. We had probably about 150 to 200 people waiting out in the cold to get in when the doors opened, and they all got some giveaways from Skullcandy and Neff, and also got a gift card for Tilly's, so they were really excited about that. And then we had X96 there that did a radio remote and played some fun games on their Wii and gave out prizes, and so that was really cool. And then we had some pro snowboarders come out and do an autograph signing. We had Dylan Thompson, who rides for Neff. He's one of their pro riders. And then we had Stevie Bell and Aaron Bittner, who are two pros that ride for Skullcandy.
Yeah, yeah.
So that was really fun. The kids were really excited, and they gave out a bunch of stickers and lanyards and all sorts of fun stuff. And then we had a DJ after that. Skullcandy brought one of their friends, DJ Finale, and he kind of closed out the afternoon playing some fun music for everyone.
So with most of your merchandise being surf, do you plan on incorporating a lot of snow and hard goods for snow?
It's something we're definitely looking into expanding into. Probably not so much the actual boards, but, you know, the gloves and goggles and maybe some heavier outerwear. It's new for us. We've been a very coastal company, and so now that we're in kind of these regions that are so much colder, it's something that'll come into our catalog, but, you know, it just kind of takes a while for things like that to happen.
So is Utah the first state that Tilly's has expanded to in a cold climate region?
It's probably there. We just opened in Green Bay also the same day. We had a big opening in Green Bay, Wisconsin.
And oh, wow.
We teamed up with the Packers out there.
So very nice.
Fun. Yeah, we had one of their cornerbacks, Jared Bush, came out and did an autograph signing. So yeah, with Green Bay and Utah, we're definitely on the map in the kind of colder regions. You can hide. Now it's gone all wrong, all along. Got you
right where I want. Run, coward, beware.
Say never fast, as bloody as ever, a splinter of devilish energy, a path of wicked terror.
So I was reading about your amazing code of ethics. I was very impressed. How has that helped you conduct business with your suppliers, merchants, and vendors? And will you explain this code for those who are listening?
It's something that's kind of been rooted in the company for a long time, and it's just important in business, you know. I think a lot of times in this industry where you're working with so many different brands, some of the values can kind of get lost. And for Tilly's, from the regional sales associates all the way through the corporate world is just incredible. Everyone I work with is amazing. And when I get to go out to these grand openings in different cities, I'm always just amazed at how friendly our staff is. They really kind of hold the values of Tilly's true, and because of that, everyone really loves working together, and it's just a great environment for everyone. It's a lot of fun.
Do you think that has helped maintain the longevity of Tilly's?
I think it definitely does, and we have so many people in the company that have worked for 5 years, 10 years, 15 years, you know, because it's just an open environment, and it really kind of supports everyone who is an employee of Tilly's, so it's been great.
So you have 120 stores now. What is it that makes your company so successful?
That's a tough one. I think the way that we kind of showcase our brands and our relationships with the brands has helped both sides. You know, we have some really great relationships with these companies that we carry, and we give them a lot of support, and so they give us a lot of support. We've been able to keep growing and help out new companies that are kind of starting up that we'll take a chance on, and you know, once they break, they're so appreciative to us that they really give us a lot of support. Like when we do these grand openings and we can have a great brand like Neff bring out some pro riders, and we can have Skull Candy bring out a DJ. It just kind of really helps on both sides of the fence for not only Tilly's but these companies that we work with.
So do you ever look to non-action sports retailers for influence?
I always try to keep up with everybody. I love seeing how people are advertising themselves and what kind of promotions they have going on. So whenever I get out to one of our malls that we're located in, I always do a little trip around and try to see what everyone else has going on.
For additional info on products, merch, and other gear, go visit Tilly's.com. And for Utah residents that can visit their new location in Farmington, go to the Station Park Shopping Center at 900 West Clark Lane. Thanks for listening to another edition from Soundwaves from the Underground. For more information about the music, interviews, and guests from this episode, go to our website at slugmag.com. And remember, if you have any questions or comments or you'd like to let us know how the show's going, you can email us at soundwaves@slugmag.com or call our voicemail line at 858-233-9324. This podcast was created by Slug Magazine and produced by Gavin Sheehan, with associate producers Jeanette D. Moses, Ricky Vigil, Esther Moronio, and Jonathan Paxton. Our executive producer is Angela H. Brown. Our theme music was performed by Birthquake and recorded by Jesse Ellis. Our main logo and art design was by T-Done, with technical design by Kate O'Connor. Make sure you listen next week when we're going to be speaking with Princess Kennedy and learning more about her concealed firearms permit experience. We're going to be speaking with Jeffrey Stedman at Yelp and learning about mac and cheese in town. We'll be learning about the new Weller Book Works going into Trolley Square. And we'll be finding out about Anna West's new art show.